Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. In the past 18 months, some 30 Long Beach Peninsula residents have been arrested by federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, or ICE, and taken to a detention facility in Tacoma. President Donald Trump campaigned on a promise to rid the country of undocumented immigrants who commit serious crimes. Yet, according to my two guests, the local detainees had been living and working peacefully on the peninsula, in some cases for years. In response to the crackdown, Peninsula native Aaron Glenn spearheaded the formation of an advocacy group for those who want to help local immigrant families. Glenn has a master's degree in teaching English to speakers of other languages. She has worked since 1996 teaching English to immigrant populations, and she also teaches Spanish at Owako High School. Also in the studio is Sydney Stevens, an author, teacher, and journalist who shares the immigrant stories in a series for the Chinook Observer entitled Stories from the Heart. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Aaron and Sydney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Would you start by telling us some about who these immigrants are who are being detained and sent to the detention facility? Aaron or Sydney?
Aaron, you're the one that probably knows that part of the story the best.
Well, I do have a list of 30 people who have been detained. Most of them, I would say 25 of the 30, I know either the person personally or I know their family members or extended family. They truly are our friends, neighbors. Some are former students of mine, former adult ESL students. One is a former coworker. So they are community members and people who many of us know and love, who've been in our community for decades.
And when you say community, you mean the peninsula?
The Long Beach Peninsula, from Ilwaco to Oysterville.
Okay. And what types of work did they do before they were arrested?
Many of the immigrants in our community work in the oyster industry, clamming, in the tourism industry. Most of the people who have been detained are working in those industries. One was a coworker who worked with me in our local school district. All sectors of our community and society, though.
Had they committed crimes beyond entering the country illegally?
I don't really ask a lot of questions in detail about the specific cases that people face. But for the most part, what I know is that most of the people are just being detained because of an unlawful entry into the country at some point or overextending a visa. And I have been aware of some crimes that have been committed, like DUIs and other minor infractions.
Speeding tickets.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but, for example, the most recent arrest one of the three most recent arrests, the person had absolutely no criminal record whatsoever. So it's hard to know all the details of each specific case.
Uh-huh.
And I don't feel like it's my right to ask a lot of questions about the details of people's personal lives. But for the most part, they're just law-abiding citizens who are a part of our community, who work and live respectful, responsible lives on a daily basis.
Well, since they are undocumented, how is it that ICE happens to come and find them and arrest them?
Good question. I don't know that we know that, and that's one of the things that maybe will come out as the stories are illuminated more. I think one of the reasons that I decided that I would work with Aaron to talk with families and to learn their stories was that our Hispanic community now, for the last couple of years, has really been living in the shadows. They're really not forthcoming, not out and about, for good reason, it turns out. But I have a number of friends in the community who have moved here, retired perhaps, and moved here within the last few years. And they were really amazed that we even have a large Hispanic community. And so this is one way of letting people know what's happening.
They were amazed because they don't see Latinos.
No,
out
they really don't. They're retired. They're not working out on the tide flats. They're not working in the Cranberries. They're not staying in motels and seeing the housemaids or whatever. And so they're just unaware. And I think that's one of my feelings is I would like to build awareness to this whole sector of our population who are under siege right now.
And what have you learned writing your series for the Chinook Observer about the immigrants?
Well, I'll tell you one of the most amazing things that I learned. I was doing a little research after having talked with a couple of families and about their situations. And probably after going to a couple of Aaron's meetings as well, I was concerned about the children that were being arrested and whose parents are being arrested. They haven't arrested any children yet, thank goodness. But what I learned by asking and doing some research is that in our school district, which is the Ocean Beach School District and covers the whole peninsula, we have a minority population of 25%, and that is mostly Hispanic. In South Bend School District, right across the bay from us, also in Pacific County, there's a 61% minority population. We've had 30 arrests in the last year and a half. South Bend has had no arrests. And we don't know why.
So you don't know what's going on, but...
Well, I mean, it seems obvious that for whatever reasons, the peninsula is being targeted. But, you know, that's... my job, what I do is try to shine a little bit of light on what's going on in the families, and I want to reflect what they're feeling, what is happening to them. I'm not an investigative reporter by any means. Maybe someone will pick that up and find out what's going on. I hope.
What happens when somebody is arrested by ICE?
They're initially taken to a Portland detention facility or an ICE office. From what we know, most of the arrests have taken place by agents from Portland, Oregon. We don't really know why they're coming from Portland and not the Seattle office, but so they typically go to Portland for some kind of intake process. And then from there, they're transported to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, which is a federal prison run by the GEO Group, a private for-profit entity. And it houses approximately 1,500 people. So there's just a lot of intake procedures, and then the people are incarcerated and typically end up staying anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks before they're able to have a bond hearing, if they qualify for a bond hearing, for a request for a bond hearing.
Do they qualify for public defenders?
They do not. They do not have access for any kind of advocacy within the center. And they do not, you don't have a right to an immigration attorney in immigration in an immigration facility like that.
Do they qualify for a translator?
They do. They can request interpreters and translators.
But if they don't have the means to hire a lawyer themselves,
right,
they don't get a lawyer?
One is not provided. No.
So what usually happens to the people there?
Well, in most cases, I'd say half of the cases, people have been able to hire attorneys, and attorneys provide an initial evaluation, obviously for a fee of approximately $500. Their case is evaluated, and if they do have a strong case, and if they may qualify for what they call relief, then an attorney will recommend that they do request a bond hearing. If they don't have a strong, solid case, or if they've had prior deportations, then an attorney might recommend that they sign a voluntary departure form and just leave voluntarily, which wouldn't be an official deportation. But if they just don't have a solid case, that's usually the recommendation. But if they do have a solid case to fight for their immigration case, then it's recommended that they request a bond. And then the attorney proceeds with that process, like putting together all kinds of other paperwork to establish moral character, that the person's been in the country for 10 years or more, that they have family members who will be impacted by their absence, and that they haven't been convicted of the crime for which they're in the facility. So this is all presented before one of three judges in a bond hearing that lasts anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. It's a very short court proceeding. The judge has reviewed all the information, and then at that point, the person either is or is not released on bond, which is a cash bond that has to be paid in order for the person to be released. And then from that point on, they begin a very long process that can last from, now they're saying, from 2 to even 6 years, because there's such a backlog of people in the process.
Do they remain in the detention center while that's going on?
At that point, if bond is granted, the person can be released as soon as the bond is paid. They're fairly large. We've seen anywhere from $7,500 to $25,000 bond amounts.
And they have to pay the full amount.
They have to pay the full amount. It's a cash bond. If they're not released on bond, then they do have to fight their immigration case from within the prison. And so people have reported meeting people there who have been there up to 2 years. It can take anywhere from 8 months to 2 years to fight your case from within.
Do you have a sense of what's happened to the 30 people whose cases are now pending?
We're working on getting that list more comprehensive and complete, but approximately half of the people have been released on bond and are back in our community, a little less than half.
Have you spoken to them?
Yes, we've spoken. Well, I've spoken, and Sydney and I have spoken to quite a few families.
How are they doing?
Okay. I mean, they have a path, it's not really clear to me if it's a husband and father, say, that has been bonded back into the community. He has a path toward immigration status and eventual lawful status, and that's a good thing. And that's about the only path that anyone has in this situation. But the wife, perhaps, is an undocumented person, and so I don't know. I have not yet talked to anybody or met anyone who the second spouse has also been arrested. I don't know if you know of any cases like that yet. Mm-hmm. But and then no matter what. Well, I guess not no matter what. If somebody is sent back to Mexico, deported, or goes on a voluntary departure and leaves behind family members, sometimes that's very complicated. Children born here are United States citizens. If children came with their families, with their parents, then they're not citizens. The spouse left behind usually is undocumented. So it's a nightmare.
And they're
really
just in a very vulnerable position at that point, the children especially.
I can't imagine. If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Aaron Glenn and Sydney Stevens. They have helped spearhead advocacy work on behalf of Mexican and other Spanish-speaking immigrants on the Long Beach Peninsula. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Have you been able to talk with the children?
Yes.
And what is it like for them?
It varies a lot. I've written a about a couple of stories that I thought were really pretty heartbreaking. One was a young boy, a 10-year-old boy, whose father had been taken, and his father was deported to Mexico. I don't know if he went on a voluntary departure or not, but when on the eve of his departure, the family was notified, and this young boy called a neighbor and to ask for a ride up to Tacoma so he could say goodbye to his father. And she said, of course, you know, she would take him, but she was driving on her way back from Portland, and she said, it'll be a couple hours, so you need to call Tacoma and find out what time, so we know if we have time. And so she continued driving. She got as far as Astoria, and he called again, and he was very upset, and he said, I'm not going. And she said, why? What happened? And he said, I cannot touch my father. If I go, I have to talk to him through one of those glass walls on a telephone, and I cannot hug him goodbye. I am not going. And that told how he felt. It was really, really tough. And another, in a different family, and equally heartbreaking in a way, the little boy was 4 and a half. And this was a family of 5 children, the oldest 14, a boy, and the youngest 4 and a half. And he was right there with his mom, a little solid little kid, watching us very closely. And when she finally convinced him to go out to play, and she said he had been with his father when his father was arrested. And so when he came home, he gathered up all his father's tools and notified his mother that he was the man of the family now, and that's why he was doing it. And she said, and then, I don't know, I think on the Saturday following, he climbed up to a sort of a high shelf and got the paper towels down and headed out the door. She said, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to wash the van. It's what Papa would do. So it just, and he, you know, she was never really out of his sight. He went out to play, but the minute we came out of the house, his eyes were right on his mother again. He was going to make sure that she was all right, she wasn't taken, and he was going to be the man of the house.
And how old is he?
4 and a half.
Wow.
The 14-year-old, on the other hand, she said, he's angry. Angry that his dad was taken, angry that they may have to go back to Mexico, angry that he can't finish school here.
So he would go back, obviously, with his family if both his parents were deported.
If they go, and, you know, but then there's always the complication, too, of paying to go. I mean, it's expensive. And to pack up all your things and send your worldly possessions, and usually that's the, you know, a wife left behind with, as you mentioned, you know, only half the income, if that, coming in, and trying to get all that together is a real problem.
How do both of you respond to the not uncommon feeling that if these undocumented people came to the United States illegally, they are breaking the law and therefore they should be deported?
I think for me it goes back to that, the point that we have decades long overdue need for immigration reform. And I think we need to stop perpetuating the idea that people can just become citizens or establish themselves as legal permanent residents very easily. And why haven't they accomplished that task in all these years? I taught over 150 students over the course of 5 years at Grays Harbor College in Owaco. And many of those students, former students of mine, are in this group of 30 who have been arrested. And I can assure you that if there had been a proactive way, a pathway for them to establish themselves here lawfully, that they would have been some of the first people to do so. There are just no easy, no, I shouldn't even say easy. There are no clear pathways to establish oneself as a lawful permanent resident, especially if a person has entered the country at any point unlawfully, whether overstaying a visa or entering as a child, as a teenager. So I think it goes back to that, the need for immigration reform. And this, in my opinion, is not what I had in mind in terms of good, solid immigration reform and policy.
Sydney?
Well, I think we're all culpable in this situation. For years and years and years, I think immigration officials and border officials and all sorts of people have looked the other way.
Employers certainly must know they're undocumented.
Yeah, sure. You know, people have come in and it has been obvious that they were undocumented. Still, they've gotten in. And there's also been a feeling among many people that the situation in the countries from which they came are so horrible that it's better for them, in that we should, you know, offer them some kind of refuge. And so we have that on the one hand, and there's also, you know, whatever that guilt thing that we all have is, depending upon when our own families came in. We came in undocumented. There were no requirements before the 1870s for documentation, as far as I know. And, you know, the immigration laws have crept up and crept up and crept up, but they have not, they're not humane, and they haven't kept up with the times.
Talk a little bit about the advocacy group that's formed to help the immigrants.
Well, in March, Ann Reeves, who lives on the peninsula, she started an ACLU People Power group, and she's been working tirelessly on this committee. And so there was an established committee that started then with members from North County, Raymond, the Raymond and South Bend areas, and from the Long Beach Peninsula. And I spoke at a meeting. I don't even remember the meeting, but Anne asked to get together for lunch. And so after that lunch meeting, we set up an immigrant advocacy training for volunteers. I offered to put on the training. And so from that point on, the committee grew and expanded. And so we're now meeting quite regularly, probably every 2 weeks, and working on all kinds of different issues from different angles, like planning events like the protest at the Northwest Detention Center. And
how long ago was that?
The rally
at the detention facility?
It was August 12th. It was a Saturday, the second Saturday in August.
And you mentioned to me that you took a busload of Pacific County residents up there to protest the detentions?
Yes, another volunteer on the committee organized the group, the bus, and we joined some other groups who were protesting that day. Also, a League of Women Voters group from Seattle, and there was a representative from Sarah Bandanan Farms, where recently a migrant worker died as a result of poor working conditions there, and another group called the Northwest Detention Center Resistance. And so the bus arrived there, and we spent about 4 hours there just meeting and greeting families of detainees and offering food and water, and also just learning a lot about what's going on at the detention center.
Were you able to get inside?
I've been inside the center quite a few times visiting people who have been detained. And so that day we just went into the waiting area. I showed some of the volunteers what it was like. But I have been there visiting some of the people.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If a listener wanted to get more involved in the group, how could he or she go about doing that?
I would suggest emailing Ann Reeves, who is leading that committee, and her email is annreeves721@gmail.com.
And is that ANN?
Yes.
REEVES?
Yes.
So annreeves@gmail.com.
annreeves721.
Thank you. Thank you. Before we close, what would both of you like listeners in general to know about the Latino community on the peninsula in particular those who have already been detained?
That's a hard one. I guess from my point of view, I just want them to know that they're there, to have a smile and a hello for people they see on the street, and to let people know that, hopefully we do live in a safe place, that the majority of people are welcoming and wish them well and want to help. And I'd like to believe anyway that that's true. And the response that I've had out in the community and by email and so on from my series thus far certainly reinforces that feeling.
And I think that they're just very well-established families in our community. Another one of the most recent three arrests is a grandfather who's been in our community for at least 25 years. And he was recently arrested, and he has children who are first generation. He has grandchildren. And I've known those people throughout my time working 21 years in education. I've worked with the children, and now I know the grandchildren. So it's just those are the people who are being taken from our communities, grandparents and parents and potentially children.
Well, thank you, both of you. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Aaron Glenn and Sydney Stevens, who have helped spearhead advocacy work on behalf of Mexican and other Spanish-speaking immigrants on the Long Beach Peninsula. Thank you, Aaron and Sydney.
Thank you,
Thanks
John.
For having us,
thank
John.
Thank you very much.
Aaron Glenn, a Peninsula native, has a master's degree in teaching English to speakers of other languages. She has worked since 1996 with immigrant populations, and she now teaches Spanish at Owaco High School. Sydney Stevens is an author, teacher, and journalist who writes an ongoing series in the Chinook Observer entitled Stories from the Heart that sheds light on local immigrant stories. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Graham Nystrom. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.